Yeah, Mr. Joanne Bieber with Life Skills. And Mr. Eric Emery. No stranger to the room.
We have two Emerys today.
Two Emerys.
Which one's better over here?
Are we required to use the mic?
For Zoom?
No, you don't have to.
Okay.
You stand there, I'll stand here. We'll go through it.
Got it.
No, that's all right. We're good.
You go introduce yourself.
All right. Well, good afternoon. Thank you all for having us. Joanne Beavers, President and CEO of Life Skills, and it seems kind of weird to stand up here, so I'm going to sit down and let you sit. Thank you all for having us. And I want to start by thanking you all. I appreciate the prayer that was offered this morning. My father is involved in local politics for a long time, almost 20 years with Seavers, and he is city council member or mayor. So I know that the work you all do is hard and difficult, but also very, very important. I'd say, well, you're our state to federal legislators. But a lot of work that you isn't possible without the work you all do first. So I appreciate all that you all do, the sacrifice you all make, because I got to see it growing up. I appreciate you all being here today and giving us a little bit of your time. But I'm the CEO for Life Skills. We're a community mental health center. Give off the screen better than Buckley Hill. And glad to hear about the Bruce Review and what you guys might want to do as well. And you'll let my colleague Eric Embry introduce himself as well.
I'm Eric Embry. I'm the CEO of Life Skills. I will be frequently looking to my left. My wife has me on a time clock so that you all get out of here on time. All right. I also want to thank Jason, the PAD board, for allowing us to discuss issues that I believe that every community in our catchment area is seeing, and that's the prevalence and increasing number of individuals that are affected by severe mental illnesses, substance use, addiction, are co-occurring to where they deal with both of them, and how that can impact the prevalence of the homelessness that you all are seeing. I'm going to go through some statistics because what we're here to tell you about is a first of its kind project that we're actually doing in Bowling Green, and why we think that this would be a good solution for the PAD region to consider at the same time. So these are statistics that we gathered together through the first iteration of this project, is that Bowling Green Police Department, they answer approximately 900 calls on an annual basis for an individual that's dealing with mental health or substance use issue. 80% of the inmates at the Warren County Jail deal with those issues as well. 1 in 5 individuals in the Brad region are affected by a mental health issue or substance use. Then at the same time, we were having communities that were getting opioid abatement settlement dollars, and due to the guidelines and the restrictions on those fundings and not being content experts in dealing with this issue, really didn't know what to do with it. The amounts varied community to community. You had some cities or counties getting millions of dollars, some getting hundreds of thousands, some getting thousands over the next few years. So we partnered with Brad and developed what we call the Anchor Project. Now, who are we? There we go. If you're familiar with the counties in PAD, you would know us historically as the Pinerol Center. As the CEO of the Pinerol Center up until January 1st of 2020, at that time, healthcare, which still is going through mergers, acquisitions, healthcare entities have to get larger because payers really only care about one thing, that's the number of covered lives. You got to have a number of covered lives to be able to negotiate rates. I knew we needed to get bigger. I grew up in the arena with Joe Dan. We both came up as CFOs. We both transitioned to CEOs, went to him and said, hey, would you like to have a discussion? Did not know at that time that their strategic plan was growth. So it just worked out. And it took us about 3 years to get to this point, but we got here. So right now we cover 18 counties, basically from Land Between the Lakes to Mammoth Cave is an easy way of doing it. We are a community mental health center that was established by KRS 210. We're quasi-governmental. Our board is made up of community members. Judge Manfield is on our board representing Todd County. Jared Nelson, I saw Jared. Jared works for PAD. He's on our board. We're always looking for board members. We have a lot in this area that we need to fill. Trigg, Hopkins, Muhlenberg. If If you know of somebody, we've asked Jason to give us names. He's started doing that. If you know of someone that would be good for our board, please let us know. We'd be happy to have a conversation with them. We run a full continuum of mental health and substance use services. We also serve individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities. If you're familiar with the Homeless Veteran Shelter that's located in Hopkinsville, Trilogy Center for Women, you know, that's life skills programs. CARF certified and accredited for our residential treatment programs. We offer a 24-hour crisis line, 988. Anybody that calls 988, they get our staff 24/7. And we're a proven partner with PADS. We've worked with them before for a project with Brad, local justices, law enforcement. You know, I've talked to multiple people, even in this room. If you've got a problem, I don't use business cards. Most people have my cell phone number, though. So we try and solve problems.
So you'll hear us talk about this term, the anchor projects. And I have to take credit for that. That is Derek Sexton, the Air Development District Director, not only to see the that started calling it that. Because we didn't have an anchor, it just kind of sucked. So now that's what we call it. And we'll use that term. We're really talking about three distinct CARFs and how they come together. And I would do justice. I think it'd be a little bit of a story of really how it all came together, because it's not unlike this discussion we're having right here this afternoon. When the opioid abatement dollars and that program came about, you guys know there's really two streams of funding. One is grant-based, and the other that comes to you all are city and county municipalities with some very specific needs and regulations around it. And I know you guys have talked about how to do that, how to use those funds, because there are some very tight regulations around how, what you use those for. And so the conversation they had was a couple of ways. One was, gosh, we don't want to spend this the wrong way, because there's a lot of rules to it. And gosh, this is really important stuff we need to deal with, and we want to make sure that we can deal with it and make an impact. But there are other discussions, like Eric mentioned, some of the groups got pretty sizable jumps. I know one of our municipalities, it was several hundred thousand dollars a year. They got $1,500. They're going to get $1,500. We'll have to handle it, and it is to spend it. But they didn't want to misuse any of those dollars. They wanted to try to make an impact in the cities and the counties and the regions. And so what kind of came out of that as a secondary conversation was, you know, can we do lots of small projects, or is there a way to find a way to do something larger and impactful for the region to really move the needle? They didn't know what that was, but that was a conversation they started at, or they could even do it the way that the program regulations were structured. Separate from that, so the same people in that room serving to the same as you all serve, we're having conversations about what are we going to do about some of the homeless populations in our communities. What are we going to do about some of our jails that are becoming overcrowded? What are we going to do about some of the challenges we see with mental health and addiction issues in our communities? And those are conversations they're having with Eric and I at our level, in our roles and those solutions. And internally, as he mentioned, on our strategic plan, we were looking at where is that happening in the country in terms of best practices. Who's figured out how to handle these and do it well? And really where we got lucky is we just happened to be the guys that were standing in the middle of all of those conversations. And so while we didn't have it figured out, we just started talking together. And, you know, I think there's a solution here somewhere. We need to address all this together. And so those conversations led to more conversations and eventually led us to a model that we found, national best practice, that didn't exist anywhere in Kentucky, but it helped kind of string together some of those challenges into a couple of solutions that we thought could really help all of the stakeholders in the situation. So that's what these three things are. The one we'll talk most about today is what we call a mental health crisis intake center. And we'll show you some pictures of that in a second. But that's a 24 hours, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, first of its kind for Kentucky facility to receive individuals that may be experiencing a mental health or substance use related crisis. They don't have to have a payer source. They don't have to have things figured out. They can just show up whenever they are, wherever they are. We're going to have the right treatment methodology, modality, and therapy. The second part, we're going to call the Aquatic Memory Center. That's something that does exist in Kentucky today. It is not in our geography. That is Kentucky, Kentucky. Lady named Alicia Webb Eddington runs that program. It is phenomenal. If you haven't heard about that yet, that's your one takeaway from today. Look it up. We're out. We're great in time. Their success rate is unbelievable. Their recidivism rate for folks that complete that program that re-enter the justice system is in the single digits. I'm going to stop right there for a second. That is inverse of every other program wide. Usually it's the opposite. The folks that succeed, the number is in the single digits. Her success rate, the off the charts. They've developed their own curriculum. It's evidence-based and it is phenomenal. They're really changing trajectory of lives, putting people back in the workforce, reuniting families. We're partnering with them to bring that into this region of state too. And third phase, where our area development district really, really is critical, is they formed an office of drug control policy. For all of this, they're like the point guard. They hired a person who's sort of overseeing all of this for us, that can bring Mountain Control organizations together, other community partners that play a role in all this, and kind of helping spearhead this through the process. This is a process really took several months, really a year and a half, probably all total, partnering together. But it ended up in us getting in front of the state legislators, asking them to help us fund this idea, and they agreed. We got sort of the building itself. Eric, you can go ahead and slide the forward one. So the picture here, the kind of L-shaped building was already there. That's the primary office headquarters for Life Skills in Bowling Green, but the building adjacent to it, it's not look like an L, is the building we just started building a few months ago. That is the crisis intake facility. So we asked them, we could demonstrate if we got the building built, you know, the services it's going to provide will be sustainable. The economic model will pay for itself. What we didn't bring today, if this is something that this group is interested in a little bit at all, it's worth coming back and showing you more of the detail. The inside is where the magic is. How it's designed is what makes it best in class. It's designed specifically for the service it provides. And I'll talk a little bit about that, but we didn't have the funding to build the building. And it's not something you can retrofit into something you already had. It has to be built specifically for the purpose you're being looking for. We asked the General Assembly to help us fund it, and they agreed. They gave us $20 million to build this building, and they gave us an additional $1.3 million for the Area Development District to start up and house the Regional Office of Drug Control Policy, and then additional funding for the Life Learning Center to expand their project to our location, and then three additional ones across the Commonwealth. So the three of those components together, the crisis facility, the Regional Drug Control Policy Office, and the Life Learning Center. Those together, we refer to as the anchor project. So the idea is, if someone's involved in they're experiencing a crisis, mental health or addiction related, wherever they come into the system, whether that's they walking on their own, the family member brings it to us, we're involved with law enforcement, or maybe they're a hospital emergency room, or the justice system, they can come to us. This facility will immediately mitigate the crisis, handle the immediate crisis at hand. The ability to set them down through the system in the same building. So we get the immediate crisis saved lives. The second floor of this building has short-term residential treatment facility bed space available. So we can get them saved lives in that short-term nature. That's the kind of clinical space that the Life Learning Center has to have the person complete before they will accept it. And the idea is, once they're through our system, we will warn hand off directly to that program. And her success rate, again, it's off the charts. Single-digit recidivism rate. So that's the plan here, is that to put that model together and offer to the citizens of South Central Capretan. Now, we know these programs are successful separately. For our knowledge, just to be the only one like getting complete. It has all moved together. The excitement around this it's been easy to generate the excitement around it. But I can tell you, the people that are involved locally, a lot of it overlap with your counties here. And there is a general excitement about, once we have this up and running in our feet under us, that they would love to see us move west, specifically here. I can tell you, from the state level, Jason Petrie was big reason we got the funding, and the first question he asked us was, once this works, where do we go next? Of course, he was very interested in bringing it to his jurisdiction. The lady of Life Learning sees lots of opportunities for just some of the natural constraints around what would make sense here with some of the things that we have in this region. Selfishly, I would love to see here too, but as I mentioned before, this is a part of the country or a part of the state where I grew up. So would love to see that here. But this backside, and I've gone too long, I apologize. Well, while we're showing the backside of the building, this is an entrance design specifically for first responders. So unfortunately, or of course, we can have a look at it. Many folks here are crisis assisting through first responders. Law enforcement, police, sheriff, ambulance, EMS. This is an entrance designed specifically for them with their help and info. This will be entrance only access by them. A safe and secure method for them to enter the building with the individual, provide a safe and secure transition from law enforcement to our staff. The best part is then they can leave and go back to their normal position in your job. So if you're in Cedar County government now, I'm certain if you hear about crisis services, probably the first thing you hear about is so much continuity and manpower case. This immediately solves that problem. There's example agencies in Nashville, Tennessee, and close to 20 risk right now. We enter this thing. Their contract with the Metro National government is 10 minutes or less. Metro National PD show up with an individual. They have to be out and back on patrol in 2 minutes or less. So ours, on average, it's hours, and I'm sure it's the same around here. We didn't guarantee 10 minutes or less the first year. We're going to start with an hour, but we think we can get it down. Even just an hour, it's going to save hundreds of thousands of dollars across each of our county government. So that's a big savings we need. But the opportunity to get folks to a safe prison environment, but more importantly, get first responders, law enforcement, sheriff's office, deputies, constables, back out patrolling the streets, providing public safety services, and not providing behavioral health services. That's a win-win for Cody Warren and Ball. I think I basically covered, I think he just went ahead and moved the slide ahead. That's really what we're talking about. Those are the key things for those parts. That the law enforcement impact is teaching a lot of days. If we intercept these folks at that point, then hopefully we can avoid them being involved in the justice system. So we keep them out of jail, but we dive the justice system. Both of those, sometimes it's where we get treatment to these folks. We can intercept them before they hit there. So we're not having to treat these folks in the jails, work out our bails, involve those staff with these individuals when we can get their treatment instead of corrections.
Thank you. Now, due to census volume, we know we don't need a facility the size that we're constructing in Bowling Green for the PAD region. So, you know, what we're interested in doing is taking pen to paper and designing something that would fit this region and fit the needs of the communities. We would include crisis stabilization beds. I don't know why it says available to all participating counties. We're required to serve anybody regardless of ability to pay. We're a safety net provider. So that's really, I don't know why that's up there. I did this slide. I don't know why I put it in that way. Medical detox capacity. There's really no medical detox in the area. The jails are the largest provider of detox across the state. That's a fact. Substance use treatment beds, mental health crisis services. We would operate it. We would place it within the PAD. We're not here saying we're going to go get $20 million from the General Assembly. We're not proposing 36,000 square foot building, have an 88 staff day one. Today, we're simply saying, is this something when you go back to your communities that they would be interested in having that would be a benefit to this area? And if so, to let us know.
Yeah, you mentioned the obvious a little bit. This is how we got the most involvement locally with our community planning. The savings, the safety impacts, the buy-in was immediate. From our city police office, I'm sorry, city chiefs of police, county sheriffs, of JLOs, our digital system. There is both a direct and indirect cost to this process. And this, I won't say it eliminates it, but it needs a substantial amount of it, almost immediately. We took a field trip to Nashville to visit one of these facilities. There's a handful of them across the country. This is becoming a trend in our space. Facilities like this, like I said, there's not one in Kentucky yet. We're building the first one in Bowling Green. Would love for the second one to be somewhere near here. When you see it in action, We went to visit, took the mayor of Bowling Green with us. We got lucky while we were there. We had an individual brought in for an involuntary evaluation. Two police officers from Metro Nashville PD brought him in and saw the exchange happen. I think he thought it was set up, like we were spamming him. So he ran outside to try to catch the police officers. Asked him, like, I want to understand what I just saw. And they explained to him how it worked. And, but it really is a situation where the law enforcement officers can bring an individual, hand them off to clinically trained individuals so they don't have to spend the time with them that they do rock the house. In Bowling Green alone, the average time is 4 hours. Some less, some more, but the average is 4 hours. We do 1,800 a year. So we do the math. I mean, that's substantial number of FTEs that are just spent on that, not like public safety goes. So it's a huge savings. That doesn't account for more of the people you keep out of jail, you keep out of the emergency rooms, and hopefully we can keep from being admitted to the state hospitals. So huge amount of reinvesting of PAC dollars we've been spending on other things. So the financial case we can make pretty easily. In terms of how this ties into the $1 billion. So there's some specific requirements in terms of how those dollars should be used. And the Area Development District, State Association level, and I apologize, forget what your association's called, but the council, spent some time talking with the State Attorney General's office about this specifically, and they got direct guidance. And the City of Bowling Green and Warren County worked together to draft an agreement with the Attorney General's office, reviewed and approved, basically, that they drafted, and both of those groups, the City of Bowling Green has enacted, I think it's going through the process at Warren County, the number of readings, but, and then the rest of the municipalities have followed suit. They've already told us that they'll make that available, and would like to as well, but it basically authorizes the use of some of these funds to help support this program. Part of that is, we mentioned we got the General Assembly allocation to help us build the building. This will allow it if we have an overrun, if we need extra things for the building, that some of those dollars we use for that because of the nature of how this is drafted. The Area Development District is actually the fiduciary. Those dollars are due to us. The Barrier or Area Development District got the state allocation. They're gonna house those funds, distribute those funds, manage the project. At the end of the day, we're just a clinical operator, and that's our partnership with the Ablature. And that's the model that makes it work. That's what the General Assembly required, to make sure it's the regional model so that serves all the counties. And they like that regional component and how the ad district functions that way. That's how we got it done. And they even told us they will see this model grow. And that's our commitment to that is, we know it's going to work. And our commitment is to open up that playbook, the recipe, if you will, and share it with anybody else that wants it. And it's a big reason to hear that.
All right, I'm getting a look of disgust from my wife, which means that we got to wrap it up. Basically, y'all go back, y'all discuss it. You want this to be pursued further, you can let Jason know. Jason lets us know, and we will put pen to paper. You got two former CFOs who can throw together a white paper to show you what the cost would be to the community, or the savings to the community, and what we think the appropriate scale of the project is.
And I will say this, we've been working on this a long time, and Jason came to us almost immediately. He said, "Look, you got to just figure it out. We just started it. I'd love to talk to you more about it." So he's been asked this to come for a long time, so you pretty good chance to speak with that.
That's it? Yes. So, because I cut it short?
Yeah.
Are there any questions?
Hey, do y'all have statistics on how many folks from this region, you know, that may be going somewhere else, whether it's Owensboro or Nashville or other things to these types? I know there's bits and pieces, but how many from this region are going out for help?
No, really. The only data that I've looked at, it was because what I heard during COVID, we're not state employees, we're not ran by the state, but during COVID, we were asked to step in and provide interim leadership at Western State Hospital. And I went over there for a 6-month commitment, a different version of the word there. I just realized that, sorry. That turned into 18 months, but what I heard from community members here was that individuals were coming in from outside of Christian County, and Western State was discharging them here to to add to the homeless population. When I had the numbers pulled, it was less than 1% over 18 months that came outside of Christian County that were discharged to an address within Christian County. So what I can tell you is that Owensboro has their own community mental health center, River Valley, that operates under the same conditions that we do. I don't have access to the numbers of, I can tell you what the Medicaid spend is across the state, but not actual number of services rendered to people from our region going outside of our region.
Any other questions? I know for Cobb County, our jail population, we're not overrunning, but our state inmate population is down about 40%, but our county inmate population is up 30%. Mm. Or no, actually it's triple. It's triple. It went from about 10 to 15 to average of 30. And that's our cost completely. And many of those folks probably could be going somewhere else. They all have some type of addiction.
They probably need to go somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else? Thank you both.
Thank you all. Oh, sweet.
This time we will turn to our director.
Well, and I'll just add, I know that a number of you all sitting in this room and I, we've had this conversation. How do you all as local officials help in this space? What can you all do? And I think, I hear from my counterpart, Eric, over there every time I talk to him, it's about this project and about the very things that are happening with this already, even though the building's not completed yet. And I think about how they could move over here to our area and assist with these same issues that I know we have in this region. So I hope you all will be open to having this discussion in the future. I think this is the first step to start having this conversation. We all know how the legislative process works. And if we're going to start having conversations with legislators, now's the time to start having a conversation with legislators about the upcoming budget session that will happen in a year and a half. So let's continue having this conversation. Thank you all for being here. Joe Dan, for those of you all who don't remember, when he said Princeton, you all probably recognize it, but Mayor Beavers, who was a longtime board member and supporter of this agency, was his father, and we appreciate his time and the leadership that he had for this organization. So very glad to make that connection. Thank you all for being here.